Hello, everybody, and welcome to Late Night in the Midlands. I am Michael Vera, and this broadcast is coming at you live out of the capital city, Columbia, South Carolina. But tonight, we have Joan Ocean. We're going to talk about the Dolphin Connection International. We're going to talk about, well, the intelligence of these creatures and UFOs and ETs. It's all kind of related, according to Joan, and we will talk to her tonight about that very thing. Okay, return we have. This is Late Night in the Midlands, and Joan Ocean is our guest tonight. Joan is internationally known for her work in the field of human, dolphin, and whale communications, with a Master of Science degree in Counseling, Psychology, and Human Development. Ms. Ocean is a psychologist and scientist who creates environments that support people in transition from one lifestyle, one dimension, and one physical form to another. In 1984, she co-founded the Jean Luc Bozzoli, their organization called Dolphin Connection International, an organization that explores the advancement of human consciousness, biophysics, and spirituality by producing visionary films, books, art forms, and ocean seminars, encouraging friendship and communication between people and ocean-swimming dolphins and whales. In 1978, Joan Ocean first met John C. Lilly. He is a scientist and felt very moved by the information he shared regarding his communication research with dolphins and extraplanetary beings. She offered to work with him on his underwater dolphin communications project. Although this volunteer work did not come to pass, Joan felt a connection with Dr. Lilly and his extraterrestrial experiences that led to her eventual relationship with the dolphins. She wrote Dolphin Connection some years ago, and she is our guest tonight. And I'm going to bring her on in just a moment. She is in Hawaii, and we're unable to call from the switchboard for some reason. So I'm going to bring her in on Skype in just a moment. Again, the website's www.latenightinthemidlands.com, and Glenn Kennedy's website is www.project.nsearch.com. So go on over, become a member, and be informed, and be patient here because I'm going to attempt to add her in here on the call. So we're going to add this to the conference, and let's see if we can get Joan on with us.
Dolphin Connection, hello.
Hi, Joan. This is Late Night in the Midlands. I've read off your bio, was unable to call you from the switchboard, so I had to bring you in on my Skype, but I want to welcome you to the program tonight.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, you can hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Thank you so much. I want to thank you very much for taking the time out to be with us tonight. Very interesting. Dolphins, Autumn, my wife is just crazy about dolphins. If you could see the living room, there are little statues of dolphins everywhere. So. So she's very interested in this tonight as well. I guess we could start out. Maybe you could tell us a little bit of what drove you in this direction. Fascinating work.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. I know it's still a mystery to me how that all happened. But I think I'll have to blame it on Dr. John Lilly. He was someone I met, and perhaps you know that he was a researcher in the field of biophysics and neurophysiology and neuroanatomy, and he was really the pioneer in human-dolphin relationships. You know of him? You probably have heard of him, huh?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I wasn't really interested in dolphins then, but his other interest, the interest of Dr. Lilly, was in the off-planet civilizations. And he had written a book on that subject, so that was of great interest to me. And so all of a sudden, you know, the way things happen, all of a sudden in my mailbox there was this flyer announcing workshop that John Lilly was doing in Montana, and it was going to be, it said, about his extraterrestrial contacts. So I decided to go. I was living in California and just thought it would be a great place to go to Feather Pike Ranch in Montana, and this was in 1978. So I did drive there for the couple of weeks, and to my surprise, all he talked about was dolphins. So even I kind of gave him a bit of a hard time because I said, now your flyer, your brochure said you were going to talk about ETs. And I remember he said to me, oh, is that what they put? He says, I never know what they write on those, the people who draw those up for me. So then finally he did one morning on that subject. But mostly he was talking about dolphins and he was playing their sounds. And actually, it was very beautiful because here we are in the hills of Montana, and he had these loudspeakers from the meeting lodge where we were with the sounds of dolphins resonating over all the hills. And I think that influenced me somehow because I began dreaming about dolphins and seeing dolphins all over. And, you know, my name was Ocean. So I never did take the clue from that. I hadn't paid much attention to that, but I guess it was preordained.
Yeah.
And probably John Lilly was the catalyst for it, I think.
I've seen dolphins twice in my life, and it was just out in the ocean. And I'll tell you, you know, it was brief. It was really quick, and I'm always fascinated when I see them because, you know, I hear so much about the intelligence of these animals. Can you tell me a little more about dolphins and whales and the intelligence and how, you know, they have their own communications, their own language?
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, I didn't even know how to swim, so I had no intention of going in the water. But what did happen to me soon after I met John Lilly and I was back home again, I did meditate regularly, and into my meditation came this very beautiful message. And it was so loving, it felt so wonderful, and it felt familiar somehow. And at the end of the message, the words were, these are the energies of the dolphins and whales, and we would like to work with you if you would like to work with us. So I thought that was really strange because, I mean, I had heard of channeling and people were channeling masters and different, you know, incredible ancient beings of light. And I was thinking, my gosh, I just got fish. You know, fish just came to me. So that was how little I knew. But they said the message, and it's in my first book, said something about that that on planet Earth, the intellectual abilities of people have far exceeded their spiritual tendencies and knowledge, and that it needed to be brought back in balance. And so they were asking me to meet with them to learn more about that. So, as I said, I didn't even know how to swim. I had never been in the water. I was afraid of the ocean, really. And I didn't know how that would come about, but I said yes, because it was such loving frequencies. It was just beautiful. And then, as fate would have it, I actually was invited on a trip to go, of all places, to Peru to swim with the Amazon dolphins there, you know, the pink ones?
Mm-hmm.
And they really are very pink. Very beautiful in color, very unusual looking, rather prehistoric, with very large melons on their head, and their dorsal fins on their back are kind of floppy, and they have these long rostrums and tiny eyes, and they were in the Amazon River, and of course it's very muddy, so I'm sure they use mostly their sonar in order to locate each other and things in the water more than their eyes. So I went along because it was a group of environmentalists who, you know, they wanted to go to preserve the dolphins. The dolphins were endangered, and they still are. A dam had been built in the river, and a lot of the places where the dolphins used to swim were now drying up, and they were dying. They were being left out on dry land in the sun.
Oh.
So I said, sure, I'll go. I really just wanted to go to Peru and the Amazon River. It sounded very interesting. But I fell in love with the dolphins there. They were very quiet and stayed underwater mostly, but the energy in the jungle, because we just slept in tents with mosquito nets for sure, and everything there was very mystical. And I just felt very changed in that environment. It was like a shamanic journey.
Mm-hmm.
And en route there, when we were going to Peru, we stopped. The person leading the group, she said, well, we have to catch a plane in Miami, so let's stop and visit the dolphins at a captive facility. So people in the group were excited to do that, and we all went there. But I knew I wasn't going to go in the water with them because, again, I didn't know how to swim. So everyone else got a mask and fins, and they went in the water with these bottlenose dolphins. And I was just sitting on the edge and on the deck, and I had my legs in the water cooling off and enjoying watching everyone else swimming. And you know how it is in these captive facilities. You hold on to the dorsal, you go for a ride, and the dolphins so kindly, I guess in the name of educating humans about them, allow this and allow themselves to be captured in some cases, although that's coming to an end now. So I was enjoying watching that, and all of a sudden one really big bottlenose, they get really big in captivity where they're fed a lot and don't exercise too much, came over and made eye contact with me. So I'm looking into the eye of this dolphin, and you know how the bottlenose can lift their head up out of the water and look at you, and we were just mesmerized. My legs were hanging down. All of a sudden, the dolphin opened his mouth and put his mouth around my leg, around the calf of my leg, and totally clamped down on my leg. And I was so amazed. I really wanted to pull my leg out right away, but I knew if I did, it would scratch me because the teeth were sharp. So I just held, and I held my leg there and held it there, and I kept looking in the eye, and the dolphin kept looking at me, and this, like, communication passed, and all of a sudden the dolphin opened its mouth and backed away and released my leg. And the minute after, I just said, I'm going in. I want to go in the water with this dolphin. I guess it was a lesson in trust.
Well, you are brave.
I completely trusted that dolphin from that point on. I trusted the dolphin when I looked into the dolphin's eye. So I just had a mask. I put that on, lowered myself down, holding on tightly to the dock, afraid to let go. The dolphin came alongside me, and there was the dorsal fin on its back right next to me. And for some strange reason, I took my arm, I grabbed onto the dorsal fin, and off we went. The dolphin was taking me for a ride over the water so fast. And for someone who couldn't swim even, it was amazing to be pulled around in the water like that. And so joyful. I couldn't stop laughing. I had so much fun with that. And then all of a sudden the dolphin dived. It dove. The dolphin dove down. Like, oh, no. And I hadn't held my breath or anything. I'm trying to hold my breath. I can't do it. I can't. And right then the dolphin crick brought me up.
Wow.
I could take a breath. And then next time I could sense when he was going to dive again, so I took a deep breath and we went down. And I was underwater now, holding on to the dolphin and going round and round. And that really was where it all began. When I came back to land, I felt like I was having a kundalini experience. The energy was running up and down my spine. And I felt so sensitive, so in love with the planet. I was careful not even to step on an ant or anything living. I couldn't bear to harm anything.
Wow.
So So that was really, really powerful, and the dolphin initiated that. And after that, I just wanted to be in the water with them in any way that I could.
See, now, I think I would have been, I can remember back before I knew how to swim when I was a little kid, and I was terrified of the water. So I give you kudos for putting your trust like that and jumping in, especially into the ocean.
In an enclosed area, so it was kind of safe, but it was very deep. And the other people with me, you can imagine their surprise, because they knew I didn't swim, and all of a sudden I went whizzing by them, holding onto a dolphin. So anyway, I had a wonderful time in Peru and did meet the pink dolphins along with the piranha that swim there in the river as well. They didn't bother me, though. And then when I came back, I just knew that I wanted to spend more time with dolphins. So I did move to Hawaii and found that the dolphins were here in Hawaii on the Kona side. And I went out by myself with a boogie board to hold on to and just kicked my way out there because I could see them. I could see an entire pod of Hawaiian spinner, free-swimming dolphins out there in the bay. And they were swimming around in circles. And I just wanted to be with them. It was such a strong calling. And so with the boogie board for safety, I paddled out. And I could swim with them a little while. And then, of course, they'd outswim me and be out of sight. But then they would circle around and come back. And then I'd get to swim with them a little bit more, and then soon they'd outswim me again and be gone. But they kept coming back. And it was so exciting. And I'm a counseling psychologist, and I had many clients that I was working with, and they heard about my experience. So they were so interested, they asked if I would bring them to meet the dolphins. So I said, sure, you know, we can all rent a house together. We can all do the cooking together. We can live on the edge of the ocean and go in the water and see if the dolphins will come over to us. So we did that for a week, and it was wonderful. And I found that a lot of people who were dealing with issues and challenges in their lives, you know, some relationship or making a living or their spiritual path, and were coming for counseling, 1 week with the dolphins, and they had figured out the answers. They knew what to do. They were so empowered.
Wow. You know, just listening to you talk about it gives me shivers. So just the thought, I mean, because dolphins are just incredible. And to be able to be out there with them, I mean, and they're so gentle. And I've heard so many stories about how they've saved people and it's just amazing, and I'd like to get into a little bit about their intelligence and just how intelligent they are. I mean, you know, they say that we spawned off of apes. I don't know about that. I think the next intelligent species would be the dolphins, wouldn't it? I mean, wouldn't that be? I mean, they could communicate with us.
Yes, yes. I never felt I could relate to the idea that we evolved from apes.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, that didn't resonate with me, nor did it resonate with me that the dolphins were once on the land and moved into the sea. And I know that's a very popular belief. But the dolphins, their brains are slightly larger than ours. They're more complex than ours. Research has shown that their brains are more active than ours. There's certain parts of their brains they're using that seems dormant on our human brains. And also, I think that they are aware of many other realms of existence, not just the linear reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first messages they gave to me was that they came here in a physical form to teach us about non-physical reality. And they came because they came in a way that was loving and playful, trustworthy and people would relate to them and would want to be with them. And then in that way, the dolphins could teach us so much more. And I go to them as a student. I'm a student in their class, in their environment. And that's the way I've learned so much. And a lot of what I say, it might seem unusual to people who haven't experienced them before, but even if you've only experienced them once or twice, but when I am with them, you know, I'm living with them like as if you would move into a culture, a group of people, indigenous people, and you'd become part of the tribe and you would learn their ways that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened to me. For 12 years straight, I stayed with them every morning for 5 hours a morning, not letting anything interfere with my time with them. And I learned directly from them through their sonar, through their acoustic imagery, through their empathy and telepathy, through their ability to shapeshift and time travel. So it still continues. And they really have many things to teach us, and at the same time, they love being with us. They find the human swimmers are very fascinating as well. So, I mean, to start with, the first thing they did was to teach me to swim, and then they taught me to dive, and they did that by swimming next to me with eye contact, and then they'd start to dive, and I didn't want to break the eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
So I would jackknife also and go down and try to keep up with them. They always beat me down, but they got me to go underwater that way. And then they began working on teaching me to be an endurance swimmer. Like they would be in front of me and I was to follow them. And often we would swim for 2 miles because the bay where I was, the edge of the bay was a mile and then a mile back again to shore. And so they built up my strength in that way. And then they really began including me in the pod. They kind of still treat me like one of their babies, very protective of me, surrounding me. If they're swimming fast and I can't keep up, I will sink and communicate with them. And I'm thinking the words, you know, wait for me. I can't swim that fast. And they'll either slow down and wait, or they'll send a couple of dolphins back to escort me.
Wow.
So in so many ways, what happens over and over, not just to me, but to now many people who have moved here just to be with the dolphins, we are aware that they can read your mind or read your frequencies. They know what you're thinking. And any time, not just me, but others too, we're wondering, where are they? Maybe we're standing on land and looking out to sea and we're wondering if the dolphins are there for that day. Or I might be on a boat with a group of people and the dolphins could be any place, the whole Pacific Ocean. Where are they today? Are they going to be with us? And when I'm wondering where they are and looking out, nearly every single time, one dolphin will leap in the air and make a great splash, showing me exactly where they are. So they respond in many ways. On the boat, in our enthusiasm, we're excited, and when they leap out of the water and spin in the air and do somersaults and what I call walk on water, they stand straight up and their tail is sweeping the water before they fall back down. And so we clap. We're always clapping and cheering for them. And then the dolphins respond. These are the Hawaiian spinner dolphins that know us so well now. And they respond by hitting their tail against the water. So they slap their tail on the water, and we clap our hands. And they always say, what is the sound of one tail slapping? Or, you know, one of those tones that you can that you've heard of. But they also do things such as, when I'm out there, like one time I was in a kayak, and I tied the kayak to a mooring, and I was swimming with them, and when I went back to the mooring, the kayak had come loose, and I didn't know where it was. I couldn't see it. It was nowhere in sight. And I said, well, you know, maybe it'll come in on the tide or something. I was swimming with the dolphins, and they swam me right to it. And my head bumped on it. And I said, oh, here's the kayak. It was quite a ways away. But they know, of course, what things are yours and what belongs to you, and they'll bring you to it. They've done that when I've lost the paddles, too. They'll bring me to the paddle, swim me over to the paddle for my kayak so I can find it.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know. I tell you, there are so many things. There's no way I could share them all, but, you know, they're very pod-oriented, the Hawaiian spinners, and they swim together in a group, so graceful, diving together, coming up together, playing, chasing each other, caressing each other always with their pectoral fins, with their tails, loving each other. And then when they see us as swimmers, if we're all spread out, time and time again I've watched as the dolphins surround us and bring us back together because everyone follows the dolphins, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So little groups of dolphins go with each group of people and bring us all together as though they want us to be a pod like they are. They round us up.
So now how long do they live? Do they have the same span as a human?
Yeah.
Or
nobody knows for sure. That hasn't been determined, but I believe because so much of their physiology is like the human body, and they're so similar to us in many ways that I'd say 70, 75 years old would be about right. I know of dolphins that have lived for 50 years because I've seen the research of Dr. Ken Norris, and others who were actually living in the same house I lived in here in Hawaii. And I saw their pictures of the dolphins, and some of them were very identifiable and were still here over these 28 years that I've been here. And they were adults back then. So I can track some of them to about 50 years old, but I think they probably live as long as we do.
Wow, that's incredible, too. Now, you've swam with whales as well? Is that correct? Oh,
yes.
You know, that would scare me a little bit. They're huge.
It would. Well, I understand because it's interesting. People, you know, sign up to come to meet the whales, and then once they get in the water, they find out they're kind of scared after all. It sounded like a good idea, but then they get a little nervous, so we just hold hands. But, I've swam with 14 different types of whales in different locations, and every one of them, they're just very gentle, always gentle. The look in their eye, most of my time has been with the humpback whales, and they just send so much love to you. It surrounds you, it moves around you, and mostly men, women, you just start crying right in your mask, right in your snorkel mask when you first meet them because it's an amount of love that you never experience anyplace else. It's so powerful, and it's that they know us, too. They know who we are. They can see your very soul, and they think we're so beautiful.
Why do you suppose... Oh, I was going to say, why do you suppose they're so trusting and friendly with us?
Well, I think because they can see us. I think they can see that we are good people. I think they can see that we are really loving people. And it is a lesson in unconditional love because look at what the human race has done to them, you know, with the nets and the sonar and the pollution and the captivity and things such as that. And yet all they do is give us back love over and over again.
Yeah, isn't that something? That's something that we were trying to cover last year is all what's going on in Japan. I mean, they trap these dolphins and just slaughter them. And it's, you know, it's sickening. I mean, we're talking about an intelligent species here. That are so human-like. The only difference is they live in the water, and they're being slaughtered.
I know. It's very sad, really. Rick O'Barry is doing a great job to bring that to an end, and many others also. And I think it will come to an end, because the other side of that is many wonderful people from Japan in particular come here to be with the dolphins and whales, and they love them so much. And so they are bringing about changes there. It's starting to happen more and more. You know, they had to be respectful of their elders. The young Japanese people were following that and being that way. But their love of the dolphins and whales is very deep. So I have a lot of hope for that to change. And besides the awareness now out there, so many people helping. Even in Japan, the schools, they were feeding the children dolphin meat for lunch. And then they found the level of mercury in the meat was very, very dangerous. And many schools there have stopped doing that now, which means there's not so much of a market for dolphin meat anymore. So it comes down to, are the killings just being done for the sake of ceremony or tradition, or is it really something they need, you know?
I think it's greed.
Yeah, these issues are being raised over there, and thank goodness for the people doing that. We all have our part to play, and I support those people and donate whenever I can, because they're doing a great job in educating. And that's really the solution, is to educate people, because once they understand and once they have contact, for instance, if they swam eye to eye with a dolphin or a whale, they change. So that's what my dream. My dream is that everyone in the world will get to swim with a dolphin or whale at least once.
See, and I wonder with their intelligence, and they are very intelligent, if, you know, one should escape that trauma like that happens in Japan, you know, you think it would tell the other ones, the word would get around. And, you know, like if I got away from some kind of camp where they were going to beat me and kill me, and I tell the other humans, hey, you don't want to go over there. So, you know, I'm kind of surprised that the word don't get around and they don't stop trusting humans because of that.
Right, and that's a very good point, Michael, because people often ask me that. They say, you know, in a number of ways, why, for instance, dolphins can leap when they're surrounded by nets. Why don't they leap out of the net? And when they know that if they swim into a certain bay, they're going to be slaughtered, why do they keep swimming into that bay?
Mm-hmm.
And why do they come up on shore and beach themselves? You know, and why do they allow themselves to be put in captivity? Because, I mean, they have a lot of teeth in their mouth. All they'd have to do is bite a few people, and it probably would come to an end.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't do any of those things. And so I had to look deep inside and communicate with them to try to understand. And what I received and what I understand as I get to know them more and more over 30 years is that they are willing to die to save planet Earth. They are dying to save humanity, to raise our consciousness. And as sad as that sounds, and even ludicrous for some people, this is what they're willing to do, and perhaps even what they came here to do, to wake us up. That if we don't protect the oceans, and we don't protect the wildlife, and all of the species that are connected to each other, interconnected, then we will not survive either. So they literally are dying to save us. And the other part of that, that goes with it a little bit, is they have a different relationship to death. And it's never, never right to kill at all, to kill dolphins and whales. It's murder. It's nothing short of murder.
Sure.
But for them, they told me that death is not nearly as frightening or painful or sad as it is for humans, because they said that we as people feel that we lose touch with the person who dies. But when the whales die, they don't lose touch. There'd be no sense of separation. Even if they move out of the body, they still communicate telepathically, and the whales and dolphins who died would still be there. So the process of death is very different for them. doesn't mean they condone it, you know, of course. So.
Right. And Joan, do the dolphins have a message for the human race?
Well, yes, you know, they have many. One of the main messages that they share, and it might seem very simple, but it's so important, is to have fun in life and to follow your heart's desire. And they really try to demonstrate that as they leap in the water and spin around. And I think their most important message, second or first to that one, is to respect all life. And they really, really respect all of life. They live in community. They share with each other. They take care of the babies. They educate each other. They have so many positive qualities that they demonstrate that we learn from. We here in Hawaii, we try to live like dolphins, literally. Even the boat captains, the people who interact with dolphins regularly, the swimmers, we try to be non-competitive and to be cooperative and support each other and to tell everyone where the dolphins are, share things openly with each other, have gatherings. It's a wonderful lifestyle. So they're just encouraging us to change our lives. That's all. But, you know, I'd like to say mention a few interesting facts about their physiology, because
sure.
Many people love dolphins and may not know some of the aspects of their body and how they operate. So is this a good time?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Okay. One thing that people find very interesting is that the dolphins never sleep like we do. They know how to shut down parts of their brain and keep other parts alert. So they never are totally in a sleep state. And lots of times when we're swimming with them, we can see one eye is open and one eye is closed as they're resting part of their brain and the other part is alert and awake. And the researchers learned about this initially because they found if they gave the dolphins any anesthesia, the dolphins would die because they choose every single breath. That's how conscious they are. They choose every breath they take. And if you put them to sleep, they don't breathe. They can't breathe. And so they are never, ever asleep. They're always awake. That's one interesting thing. And something that I've observed also is they seem to have some degree of control over their time of death and their time of giving birth. I have had the wonderful experience of seeing five spinner dolphins giving birth all on the same morning. The babies coming out tail first, spiraling out, and then quickly swimming to the surface to get their first breath of air. And the dolphins were doing this together. And I guess this is not so unusual because there's the joeys in Australia, the kangaroos. They also choose to some degree when the baby should be born. So the dolphins will pick a good place and time and often have that happen together. For example, right now in August, I have a seminar called Birthing Dolphins because more dolphins are born in August of the spinners than any other month. They give birth all year. But August, there are so many itsy-bitsy dolphins. They look like little fish swimming alongside their mothers. They're so cute. They also seem to know how to control their emotions. I know when John Lilly and others did some research, connected some to parts of their brain, a little electrode to see how they would react and try to monitor what would happen if a dolphin felt anger or it was feeling pain. What would the dolphin do? And what they found is the dolphin never attacked another dolphin or attacked a person. The dolphin instead would stay where it was and just shake and shake and shake its entire body until that feeling had left, until that sensation was gone. So that's another interesting thing, and they're not really aggressive. Any stories that I've heard of any aggression in dolphins and whales has only been in captive situations, not in the wild. So they also connect with each other using pod mind, you know, or group mind. You'll see them as they're swimming. All of a sudden, they all dive together. They all decide to swim out of the bay together. This information is communicated instantaneously to every one of them. It's very powerful to watch. And all of these things, I think, are things that we are learning, too. I mean, we have a lot of similarities with them. We're similar in size. We have a lot of the same internal organs. We breathe air. We both sleep, and we have certain eating patterns, and we nurse the young, and we have smiles on our faces,
mm-hmm.
and we make eye contact, and we have feelings. Definitely, dolphins have feelings. I have seen the mothers mourn when their babies died. This is very apparent. For example, when there were two dolphins named Joe and Rosie that John Lilly was working with and loved and cared for, and at one point when Rosie had a baby in captivity, the baby didn't survive. It died. And I went to see her. They were down in Florida at the time. And I was standing there on the land, and I could see Rosie all the way over on the other side of the enclosure, just hanging so quiet in the water. There were other dolphins there swimming around. She wasn't meeting with them at all. She was staying by herself. And you just felt she was sad. Occasionally she'd float a little, so you'd see her eye above the water. Then she'd sink down again and float up, just staying there. It's so unlike a dolphin to be that quiet. And my heart just felt so sad for her, because it's not easy for dolphins to have living babies in captive situations. So I just put out my thoughts to her. I said, "Rosie, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry that your baby died. I really care about you. And soon you'll be free, because Dr. Lilly is going to free you." And I was talking to her like that in my mm-hmm. mind. And then I watched, and very quietly, she turned and just slowly swam over to my side of the enclosure. And she just stayed there right by me. And then she put her head up and let me lean down and touch her and kind of pet her and look into her eye. And I had that connection with her. And then when that was done, she turned and went back over in her corner again on that side. And I knew she had done that for me, you know, to reassure me, to make me feel better, and to acknowledge that she heard my message.
Wow.
I mean, they have very, very deep feelings, very much empathy.
That's amazing that they care for their young like that and mourn. And, you know, Autumn and I had watched some videos going back to the Japan situation, and you know, you can tell that they, you know, they were going crazy over their babies and such, and it's just, it's horrifying to watch. But
it is.
Yeah.
I have so many people who refuse to watch it, you know, because of that. I have mixed feelings. Sometimes I think, well, it's really happening. You know, you have to look at it so you can really get the full impact of it. You know,
right.
I get very emotional about it.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, it's just such a sad thing, because the people just don't understand, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the dolphins and whales, they have so much to teach us, and they are so wise. And, well, we can only hope that people will soon realize it and begin to learn from them.
Absolutely.
So we try to help them here. You know, we've had a number of situations where dolphins needed help, and so we really like to give back. And they've come over sometimes to the boat, like when I'm in a boat, like in a Zodiac, and all of a sudden one dolphin will separate himself from the pod and just come over right along the boat. And so right away I pay attention, because why is this one dolphin alone? And then when I look carefully, I can see he's trailing some line, you know, from a fishing line.
Right.
And it's wrapped around his mouth and around his dorsal fin. And they do come over to the boat because they realize that we have hands, that we can help them. And so I always have a scissor, a blunt-edged scissor on the boat. And the dolphin will let us cut the line, at least if we can shorten it up a bit so there's not so much drag, and try to get it off. You know, they don't like to hold still. It's a little different than with a whale, where a whale will often hold relatively still while big nets and things are cut off of them. It takes a long time. The dolphins are always moving. It's very rare for them to be still. So it's kind of snip a bit off and then wait till he comes back and snip another piece off. Mm-hmm. So we've done that, and fishing hooks also sometimes. And an interesting thing that's happened here that we see sometimes is there's like this coral growth that grows from their teeth, and it's a big white round ball. It looks like it's coral. At first, when the dolphin swam over to me, first time I saw it, I thought it was holding like a white flower in its mouth, a big round flower. Huh. And then when it got close, I saw, no, it was something stuck on its teeth that had grown and grown. And on that day, the dolphin came over close enough, and of course I always put out the thought, would you like me to help you? Because I'd never force myself on them. I know they're highly intelligent. It's up to them. There might be a reason that we don't know about, that some of this is happening. So I always ask, and this dolphin came over really close, so I knew he wanted me to help him. And so I reached out my hand and grabbed that big hard thing and tried to break it off, and it was so hard. I heard a little crack, but I couldn't get it off, and then the dolphin swam away. You know, they don't give you a lot of time to do that. And so it didn't really come off right then, but then 2 days later I saw it had fallen off. So that was good. And they also will bring their babies over. Like we've had like a baby dolphin was caught in some heavy fishing nets that had somehow gotten wrapped around the tail. You know, they're so playful, they'll swim into things and around things and twist around and get caught. And the baby couldn't come up to breathe because it couldn't pull up that whole net behind it. So we had to hold the baby in our arms and hold it up so that the baby could breathe, and the mother was circling around. She was fine. The baby's little heart was beating so fast because it was frightening and having a hard time breathing until we held him up. And then someone had to swim all the way to shore. We had swam out on that day and get whatever they could find, a big knife, and start cutting the rope off. So we tried to really be aware of that. One time when the U.S. Navy was here with their sonar, a baby dolphin got separated from her pod, and because those sounds interfere with their ability to hear and sometimes even make the dolphins deaf, this baby couldn't find her mother. And so a different boat saw her, and then they called me on my boat and said, you know, Joan, could you come help? So I got in the water, and I tried to get close to the baby, but, of course, they can swim much faster than we can, and it was swimming erratic in and out, and it was scared, and I couldn't really get close. I wanted to play the role of her mother and let her swim close to me, and I would swim her back. I could see the pod. It was about 300 feet away, but she couldn't find them. So I just kept getting in, and then I'd have to get back on the boat, and the boat would move me close, and I'd get in again. And finally, she entrained next to me. It was the sweetest thing. She went into my slipstream as I was swimming quietly, and she came right next to me and stayed with me, and I was able to swim her back to the pod. So, you know, whenever we can do that, it's so good. And we don't always have success stories. Just a couple of months ago, a baby had a jellyfish got into its blowhole, and it swelled up, and the baby couldn't breathe. And I went in the water, and I was trying to give it CPR through its mouth, but that, you know, that's not really where they breathe. They breathe through the blowhole on the top of the head, and that was shut tight. And in no time, the baby died right then and there, and the mother was had brought the baby over. And so there wasn't really anything I could do. There was no time. And
that's
there were children on a boat with me that day, so I just temporarily lifted the baby dolphin up for them to see, and they were able to pet the baby and see it and feel so much love for the baby. And then I put it back in the water with the mother, the body of the baby, for her to, of course, stay with it. Because, you know, when I was in the Canaries, and I saw this in the Azores, too, there was a mother dolphin, her baby apparently had died. And in the Canaries, that mother pushed that baby along, even though it was no longer living, for 6 days. She wouldn't give up the body even.
Wow.
And I noticed that sometimes when she was tired, the other dolphins would help her to do that. As long as she still wanted to be with that body of the baby, they all helped her to do that. And then when she was ready to give that up, then I didn't see the baby with her anymore.
Yeah, we could definitely learn something from the dolphins, no doubt about that. Now, with this Navy sonar, this has been a problem, hasn't it? I've even heard about them using dolphins for their weaponry to find mines and things like that in the water.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I have seen footage of that, too, where they attach a headpiece to the dolphin's head and then have a bomb there that has something magnetic on it. And then when it swims under a ship, it is attracted to the underside of the ship and sticks onto the bottom of the ship. And it's an explosive. And then the dolphin is to swim away. They have been using them for a number of things, you know, for finding mines and things like that in the Persian Gulf, and things that we don't even know about. I have a friend who is in San Diego, and he goes out at night in the Navy with the dolphins at like 2 a.m. in the morning. They go into the deep water, and they're doing training there with the dolphins, and of course he can't talk about that. It's all classified.
That's horrible. You know, they just destructive, so destructive. I mean, they get the people in their wars, the establishment, and then they got to involve the dolphins, too. It's terrible.
Yeah, and, you know, it also reminds us, you know, not to be judgmental about what other countries are doing, because unfortunately in our own country we have things like that going on, too, you know.
Yeah,
so, yeah, they have that, the sonar, and personally I feel that they are targeting the whales. They can test their sonar on the whales. When whales die, they sink to the bottom. Almost all the whales do, except for the right whales. They sink, and so it's not as though you're going to see a lot of carcasses floating on the surface unless they wash to shore. And so we don't really know how many died, and I was involved in a lawsuit against the U.S. Navy, which was totally out of my element. I'm not someone who sues people or believes in suing. I always believe in a spiritual way of working things out with love, and I still do believe in that. But when you see dolphins and whales dying and you see what's happening and the pain they're in, you have to do something. You know, it's time to take action. And more people are, thank goodness, and people doing much greater things than I am in that field. But, you know, at first we won in the lower court in San Francisco in the Ninth District Court. The judge there, the woman, she always voted in favor of, in favor of the whales and asked the Navy to make a new environmental impact statement and to cease and desist, at least temporarily, from deploying the sonar. And so it was very hopeful. But then the Navy took the court case to the Supreme Court, and there was a different judge, and he ruled in favor of the Navy. So we didn't win that, and the ruling was that national security is more important than natural resources. That's what they called the whales. So that was disappointing. And you know, you search your mind, because as a spiritual person, you'd say, why did that happen? You know, why wasn't it stopped? And again, what occurred because of that was so many people were outraged by that decision that the desire to help whales and help the ocean increased 100-fold. There's so many more people now who are out there trying to help, gathering the proof that the sonar is killing whales and preparing to bring that forward again with more actual facts how detrimental it is, not only for the whales, but for the whole ecosystem in the ocean.
Yeah, and I'm glad, and I hope that they do keep bringing attention to that, because it's criminal, in my opinion. It's absolutely criminal.
It is, yeah. So, you know, there's a whole nother level there with the dolphins that's of interest to me, and that's the spiritual level, the teachings that they've been sharing. And one of the things they told me right in the beginning, the dolphins, and when I say they told me, what I mean is they communicate with me in a number of different ways. And one way is acoustic imagery. Their acoustic areas of the brain are 40% larger than in the human brain. So they will send acoustic, which is sound, pictures. And I receive pictures in my mind from them. They're sending them to me. And often it's a holographic image. It contains so much information. It's not like a linear sentence, you know, where you might say the boy is walking his dog in the park. And then you'd have to ask, well, what kind of dog and what park and what does the boy look like and how old is he? But when the dolphins and whales send information, you get the whole piece of information. You get the image and the scents and the smells and the history and the meaning of it and the feelings involved. It's an incredible communication. So they send that acoustic imagery, and then also telepathy. They use telepathy and also telepathy, which is a word they prefer, which is they send feelings to you, which is another way of saying vibrations. So they'll send you vibrations, and the cells of your body can read that. You understand what they're sending, eventually you do, when you're in the water with them. So they are able to communicate with us in that way. And they told me that there were five things that we have now on Earth that is available to the human race that would be good for us to use and know about, but we're not using yet. And so they gave them to me, and this was back in 1988. So now we are involved in some of these, but back then it was fairly new, and certainly new to me. And one was anti-gravity, the energy source of anti-gravity. Another resource that we have is, they said, hydrogen in the way it is used by the sun, where the waste product of it is water, which would be very good on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third one was cold fusion. And then a fourth one was the power of pod mind. And they said this was the most powerful energy resource we have, that if all of us could come together with clear and common intentions, we could change the entire world. So we kind of know that, but it's not always so easy to do, you know? Even when you're thinking of something like world peace, everyone has a little different idea of what does that really mean, you know?
Right.
So to have a clear intention is a good thing to practice and to work with in groups. And they said that's the most powerful. And then the fifth thing, I couldn't really understand what it was. And they kept showing me images of bubbles and showing me physical bubbles, and everything was bubbles, and to the point where the cover of my first book is a dolphin coming through bubbles. And I have searched and searched, what are they trying to tell me here about an energy source or a resource that we would benefit the human race so much that has to do with bubbles? And I've looked at all kinds of different things in space, and, you know, lately I've really been researching the bubble universes and the multiverse. So that might be it, because in the very beginning, the dolphins told me that they came to our planet through a window in time. So that sounded nice. I didn't know what they meant.
And yeah.
This was back a ways. And a window in time, they said that in a civilization like ours, meaning the human race, where we believe in linear timeline that has a past and a present and a future, and it's all in a line, it's possible for an advanced race, if they're called upon, to come into our reality and find a place along our timeline where they can insert themselves and be part of our timeline from that point on.
Right.
And they said when they do that, not only in the case of dolphins do they come in a physical body as dolphins in the ocean, seen by sailors and people on shore and everyone, but also they would bring in the entire history, the history of dolphins on planet Earth would also come in. And it would appear as if we had a history a million years back where dolphins were always here. And there'd be statues and hieroglyphs and legends and Roman and Greek and images. And all of that, they told me, was brought in at one time.
Wow.
So this is a little hard for a lot of people to comprehend. I think I touched on it in my book. Not sure now because I wrote that quite a while ago, the first book. But, yeah, that's what they told me, that they came in during a window in time. And since then, I have had contact with star beings, our extraterrestrial benevolent friends, and they have referred to that same kind of ability or merging of frequencies as vertical intervention. Yeah, that's what they called it, instead of window in time. You could see they'd come in vertically along our horizontal timeline.
Now, Joan, we're going to take a call here really quick. We've got Barry in California. Barry, you're on Late Night in the Midlands.
Good evening, Mike and Joan. Can you hear me okay?
Good evening. Yes, sir.
Hello. Yeah. Yes.
Great. Rosalind Peterson, not only does she cover the chemtrails, but she talks about all these exercises that the Navy is doing on the coast, East Coast, West Coast, and I believe the Gulf, and how it is affecting the marine life and with the sounds and all that, and how it's ruining the land also. But, since you're talking about dolphins, she does talk about the marine life. It's definitely, it's not right.
No, it's not.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. And, it's interesting because I don't know exactly how the technology works. That's not really my field of technology, but I'm very aware of it. And like I mentioned, I had been part of the lawsuit to oppose it. But it's interesting that just this past month, the U.S. Navy has been here with the RIMPAC exercises, Rim of the Pacific, it stands for RIMPAC, and from many, many different countries all came with their warships and war technologies to learn about the latest kinds of equipment and technology that is available for war. So while it was an interesting thing because I was going out every day on the boat as usual, and I see pretty much about 300 to 400 spinner dolphins every day that we are with. And for that whole time, they weren't in their usual place. They weren't in the location along the west coast of the Big Island that they usually are. And all the boats that are looking for the dolphins and carefully letting people swim among them were calling each other, and we couldn't find them. And we had to go all the way up to the very north of the island or all the way down to the south to find the dolphins. It was very notable. I don't know for sure if it was caused by what was going on, but we did experience in the water, we would be diving down and all of a sudden you'd hear an explosion, and then a few seconds later your body would be impacted by it. We'd actually get knocked by an underwater sound wave from the explosion. So, I mean, this is happening right here in a whale sanctuary, you know, where they are protected. And we have had a controversy. People have decided you shouldn't swim with dolphins. And what's happening often is I feel what's behind that, the powers that be, would like people not to go in the water because they really don't want to take the chance on killing a human being. I hope they don't want to. And so they've got to kind of get us out of the water so that they can go ahead and do their testing without having it come back to them that they're injuring or making people ill, because that's what happened to us in 1998. We went in the water next to the Navy ship every day, and every time they'd start using their sonar, we could hear it. We had a hydrophone. We were recording it. You could hear the sound of it starting up, and then we would radio the ship and say, we are now putting people in the water. We are now putting swimmers in the water, and then we would go in, and they had to turn it off. And then we would stay in the water as long as we could. It was, at that time, it was February, March. It was kind of cool in the water when you're not swimming, when you're just hanging there. And so then we'd get back on the boat, and then they'd start it up again, and then we would radio again. So they couldn't say they didn't know we're in the water. We are now putting swimmers in the water, and then they had to turn it off. So after a month of that, they left. And they hadn't been back, as far as I know, until now this summer. RIMPAC came, and we're here in the Hawaiian Islands in general doing their experiments. So what they have, they were putting something in the air called chaff. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's, to me, it's similar to chemtrails because it also has aluminum particles, in it. And it was very interesting because the local weatherman showing the radar screen over the islands and saying where the sun and where the wind was and the rain was, and you'd see the clouds, and then every night he'd point out and say this big amount of white cloud-looking effect on the radar screen, was not clouds, but it was chaff. That was military chaff. And it was very cloudy, and it was affecting the weather. And when I researched that, what I found was it's something they're putting in the air now so that you cannot detect airplanes, so that it can make planes undetectable by enemy, quote-unquote, sonar, radar. So that has been happening right here. And I don't know, you know, how long that can go on before it has to be stopped. It absolutely has to be stopped. And, you know, I'm keeping up with it as best I can. And I think we just have to get a whole new group of people there in Congress, a whole lot of new people to oversee this and to care about the planet a lot more. Because these detrimental things are long living. They're not going to go away. They have to be stopped.
That's right. And we need to wipe it clean. We need a clean slate. Go ahead, Bert.
I'm really curious, the judge that made that ruling, what kind of connection that he has with the Navy or military, if he has, how can I put it, well, he's not being biased, you know what I mean, on his decision.
Well, which person who made what?
Go ahead.
Which person who made a ruling, you said?
You said
you mean the judge?
The judge. If he's been influenced by the military to make that decision.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm quite sure. Yeah.
And just one more
question.
And,
you know,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I want to make sure it's understood that I have nothing against the U.S. Navy and all the wonderful people in the Navy, you know, really. It's not them. As we know, there are just some orders coming down from the top that they have to follow. You know, that's what's going on there, not the Navy people themselves. And, yeah, that judge just made that decision. Now, I do believe I have some inside sources that are saying the Navy is trying to find a way to help the whales avoid the sonar, that they are looking at research that could do that, you know. But, of course, as we know, it's much more than the whales. As you said, it's the marine life. It's affecting everything in the ocean.
Right.
So there's still a lot of work to do on that. It's of great concern.
Can I ask one more question? It has to do with Fukushima. You know, because I really believe that we're living in the last days. I don't know if you believe in the Bible or not, and Bible prophecy. Mm-hmm. It says that a third of the land is going to be destroyed, a third of the water is going to be destroyed. And I believe that Fukushima could be possibly part of that prophecy. And so with that said, do you see the effects of radiation coming into the waters there and where you're at affecting the marine layer?
In Hawaii? You know, we know that it's been coming, reaching the coast of California. Is an interesting flow of water and wind, like coming out of Japan, from what I understand. It tends to go north and circle around down to California and around that way. So we're kind of in the middle, and we're not experiencing it, as far as I know, that much yet, you know. Yeah, from other people and other reports and radiation levels that are being taken, like in California and other places, it's dangerous. Now, personally, I mean, I believe that there's also a higher power, that there is a higher energy that is going to help us, and I feel that very strongly also, and that what may look hopeless and just catastrophic to us at this time may be resolved in ways that we cannot even imagine yet. I think there is some good that's working on our behalf and for us, and that I know there are technologies that can clean this all up. It can be done. So I am holding that image and that light because that's where I'd like to put my faith and belief right now.
Right. And Barry, thank you so much for the call and the great questions. And, you know, Joan, I've talked to a gentleman, I don't know, probably a year ago now, John Searle, who says that he had invented a device that's anti-gravity and that it can actually clean up all the pollution in the air. Now,
right.
I believe that this stuff exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I do, too, and, you know, there's got to be a solution, a way to work it out, and I believe it will be, because ultimately, maybe it's just me, but I have a lot of faith in the human race. I really believe in the goodness of people. I know that we can all turn it around, whether it's through education or the technology or through prayer. However we all excel, whatever we need to do together, we really can do it. We can create that, what the dolphins call the pod mind effect, and bring about a change for the good.
Yeah, we absolutely need a change for the good, without a doubt. Before we get into the ET stuff, now that we're on the subject about Earth, what can the dolphins tell us about maybe past Earth changes, or more important, the Earth changes that we're going through now? Because we're definitely going through some changes, man-made or otherwise.
Right. Well, there's a lot of different understandings about this, but from what the dolphins revealed to me, partly through their educating me about a window in time and vertical intervention, that things have changed. Apparently, from what I understand from my extraterrestrial friends, there are requests coming from people on the Earth, from people who are in a space of love and light beings and light workers on Earth, asking for help. And because we're asking for help, they're able to come in and help us. And what's happened, from my understanding, is there were going to be and prophesied and predicted to be a lot of catastrophes, and many of them are not going to happen because we have changed it with our love. We have brought about a change here, and love is the word I use, but it's a frequency, you know. It's enough people on the planet all vibrating a very inspired and refined frequency of light that's changing consciousness. And that consciousness is changing our, what you could call our timeline. So we were on a catastrophic timeline, and there still will be some from what I understand, but we have switched to something better. And it's just due to all the people here who have wished for it, who have wanted it, who have said, I'm not going to hate my brother anymore. I'm not going to hate that culture, that religion, those people. I'm not going to hate other organizations. I'm not going to hate the Navy or anyone. I'm going to understand and realize that we're all working together for the upliftment of the planet. Sometimes it takes catastrophe, and most of the time it takes caring and compassion. So I really believe that we have changed from what was a catastrophic one. And this may just be individual. Maybe this is just my personal timeline, and I can't really speak for everyone.
Right.
But that's the way I see it right now.
Alfred Weber was on not long ago talking about the different timelines.
He's a good friend. Yeah.
Yeah, he's.
I'm going to have a conference next year in 2013 about time travel, and Alfred Lambert Weber will be one of the speakers, along with Andy Bisaggio and Bernard Mendez. They'll be coming here to Hawaii and meeting the dolphins, and we're all going to share our information together at a symposium. So I'm excited about that, because you know how that is. Every time you get together with like-minded souls, you learn more and more and more. You share your information, and you take another leap in awareness. So it's going to be incredible as we come together. I think it'll probably be in the summer. I'm just setting it up now.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Alfred Weber, he's a regular. He comes on this program pretty often and always has fascinating information. I love talking to Alfred Weber.
Yes, me too. Yeah, I'm part of his Exo University. And proud to be, you know. So I'm a interspecies communicator for his university. So we'll do that when the people come here, too.
Oh, that's fascinating. So now, what do you think about time travel? What do we know about it?
Well, you know, again, I can always refer back to the dolphins, because I would be swimming with them. And in the beginning, no one was out there, you know, no one was swimming with them yet here in Hawaii. It was unheard of, because the dolphins would just swim away. But because I'd go back day after day after day, and I was included in their pod, I could swim with them for hours. And what would happen, there was a certain dolphin I named X, because he had two X's on the side of his body. They looked almost like varicose veins or something, little protrusions in the shape of X's, so very easily identifiable. And that dolphin would swim next to me, right? Our heads would be together, looking into each other's eyes, and we would go on and on for a long time, because I totally trusted them. I didn't have to look up. I was using a snorkel to breathe. And I knew the dolphin would guide me and take care of me and bring me back to shore when the time was up and things like that. And so with that experience, I started to realize that we were doing more than just swimming. We would get into a kind of a meditative state. and shape-shifting was happening a bit. It felt like the dolphin was experimenting being a human, and my energy field was receiving the dolphin's energy, and I could feel the incredible love that the dolphins have within them. It was so beautiful. So I always enjoyed it, and then we began to do like time travel together. All of a sudden, it would be perhaps described as an out-of-body experience because although I was kicking my legs and moving, I could totally trust the dolphin, and I didn't have to have anything on my mind, and we would just go, and I would go to a different location. So I had asked the question, like, what is ahead for the human race? You know, what is ahead for planet Earth? And so I was brought to a place, or I traveled to a place where the Earth had become totally barren, and it looked desolate, and there were very few people there, and it was so upsetting, and I just knew something terrible had happened, that when I finally came back and the dolphin brought me back to shore, so to speak, you know, I put my head up and saw where I was and swam back to shore. I was in tears. I was so upset to think, oh, what have we done to our Earth, to our beautiful Earth? What have we done? And so I didn't want to do that again. That was the first time I had that experience with the dolphins. And I purposely, when I would go out to swim, I wouldn't make eye contact for a couple of weeks because it upset me so much. But finally, my curiosity got the better of me, and I thought, well, that was kind of interesting. Where did I go? What did I see? What was that? So I decided to do it again. And the next time, along came X, and we're swimming side by side, and I got into this meditation, and all of a sudden, boom, I was out of body. And there I was in this beautiful place full of greenery, and it was lush, and there was a running brook with clear water. You could drink right out of the brook. The water was delicious. There were all people there, families and children. Everything was flourishing, and I loved being there. And so I asked the dolphins, well, what was that? And they said, that's your future. And I said, well, I thought the other place was my future. And, of course, then, you know, they said, yes, those are both the futures. And there are many futures. And what you're doing in your life right now will determine which future you will have.
Wow.
So, to me, that was my first experience of becoming fully aware of time travel and that there are many different timelines you can enter.
That's fascinating.
Actually, yeah, because that's the work I do now. I do seminars on that, and we only go to positive timelines to witness what is happening there. And it's very, very insightful and also empowering because I think we really are multidimensional people, just like the dolphins are. And it's time for us to acknowledge that and to begin to experience multidimensions. To move out of the linear three-dimensional that we've been in for so long and begin to explore all these other wonderful timelines that are out there. So it's good to do it with a guide, with someone who can take you there and bring you back. And it's what I'm finding in the seminars that I'm doing is people's lives are changed for the better because when they witness the possibilities and the advances and their abilities that are obvious in these other timelines, they come back and they're able to put them into action now. So I am so excited by that. And, of course, then, you know, I talked to Alfred and I talked to Andy Bisaggio, who's physically time traveled. I don't know if you know of him, but...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it's really part of our evolutionary process. And the more we can do it, and I've always noticed our dear guides or God, the source, is so gentle with us, you know, carefully leading us into these places, making it joyful and pleasant, and preparing us for what's ahead. And it's a beautiful, beautiful world that's ahead. so this is how I personally have been interested and interacting with different timelines.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, the beautiful part, because, you know, if you watch the lamestream media every day, you would swear that the world's coming to an end any day now. And so
exactly, I know. And I do watch that because I like to see kind of what's being put out there, you know.
Right, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, I just said, what are they telling the people now? And what's going on? And, of course, you know, you're always hoping as you're watching that you're going to see, you know, more arrests and more people being brought into the light, the corruption being revealed, and, you know, looking for that to happen. And it is. Some of it's being kept very quiet, and some of it is made public. But more and more, it does seem to be coming out. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And, you know, I think that people talk about 2012 being the end of the world or what have you. And I look at it differently. I look at it as the end of the world as we know it. I think people are waking up, completely waking up, and I think that new consciousness is on the way, and that's my opinion. I think that, yeah, things are going to get worse before they get better, but they will get better. I really believe that.
Yes, I agree completely. That's just how I feel about it, too, yes. And the way it's been shown to us, too, really, you know. We know these things. Our higher self knows it already, you know.
That's right. And all right, Joan, dolphins, are they extraterrestrial?
Well, in some ways they are. I like to share the story that when I was living on Oahu first in Hawaii, and I wasn't living yet on the Big Island, and then I received this message from the Arcturians, and they said, well, if you move to the Big Island, you'll have contact in the physical with extraterrestrials. So I said, okay, that's it. I'm going. You know, so I moved over to the Big Island, and I waited and waited, and I was swimming with the dolphins, and I'm waiting and waiting. And finally, one day, I got the message from the dolphins. They said, we are extraterrestrial because we live in the ocean. We're not on terra firma. We're in the water, so therefore, we are extraterrestrial. So you could say that absolutely, and they certainly have a lot of the same qualities of the extraterrestrial friends that I have contact with. You know, you get the same vibrational feeling, like the Sirians were the first. My friends from Sirius were so loving, and when the dolphins came in, it was after that, and I felt the similarity between that frequency, the you felt like you're enveloped in a cocoon of love when they're interacting with you. So I once asked the dolphins even, I said, well, are you Sirian? Are you from Sirius? Because, you know, us humans, we like them to have a location. You know, we want to be able to give them a label and say they're from here like we do for ourselves. And all they said was something like that they have part of the Sirian energy within them. But mostly they don't really claim to be from a place, you know.
Right.
They're more from a composite of many different fields of energy, all included in who they are. And the extraterrestrials say the same thing. So I feel they're definitely in touch with each other, the dolphins and extraterrestrials. And I remember the dolphins gave me a message. I thought, well, I'm not sharing that with anyone. That is just too far out. I'll lose all credibility. I'm not going to put that in my book. And usually when they tell me something, you know, I respect it. I trust them. And I put it in there. But I stalled on this one, and they said, put it in, put this in. So what they were telling me was that there are extraterrestrial ships that navigate underwater, and that they are moving back there. It's very easy for them. They have technology, of course, that can go through black holes, that can traverse multi-dimensions and hyperspace. And so, of course, they have the technology that can withstand great depths in the ocean and move around on the ocean floor or from continent to continent in that way without being seen if they don't want to be. And it may also be what the Navy is targeting. But they said, the dolphins were telling me, that they sometimes enter into these ships, that they are friends with the extraterrestrials, and that there is a opening underneath and a place where they can swim in, a holding area, and then they come up, you know, through these somehow in water up onto the ship into large pools, and then they're transmitting information from what they learned about Earth or in the ocean, the health of the ocean, the people they swim with, I'm not sure what all. So I thought, whoa, that's kind of far out, you know. And then you know how sometimes you get corroboration, and when you're doubting or not sure if you want to tell anyone that, I usually wait till I get 3 corroboration before I put something out, because I feel very responsible to share the truth. And all of a sudden I received a few faxes from Australia to me here in Hawaii. And here was a man who's a wonderful artist. His name is Kinsley Jarrett. Beautiful, beautiful paintings of ascended masters, of Jesus and Buddha and Kutumi, and all in color that he's done. And all of a sudden, he's sending me these other black and white pictures through a fax. He said, Joan, I thought you might like to see this. And what his story was, that he was out in the woods where he could do his art. He always would bring a big pad and all of his colored pencils, and he'd go out there, and the nature spirits would present themselves, and he could draw them in detailed pictures of every little thing about them, their little eyes, their ears, their hats, if they had them on, whatever, little elves and things. And he said, while I was out there, he said, guess what? I met a being who said he was not from this planet. And so he didn't know about anything like that. That was like new news for him. And so I just kept a straight, I said, oh, really? Very nice. Oh, interesting. And he said, yes, and they asked if I would come up on their ship. And so he said, of course he would. He would love to. That'd be so exciting. Now, this is a man in his 70s, white hair, you know, just the sweetest, most trusting little old man you'd ever want to meet. And he said, yes. And so we met them in the woods 2 days at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they brought him up on the ship. He was, like, lifted up. He drew pictures of everything. I have them. I have them on my website, my other website, the one that's called etfriends.com. Mm-hmm. And they brought him up on the ship. And there, while he was there and touring around, there he saw on the ship giant pools with dolphins swimming in them. And there were, like, receiver and transmitter kind of technologies on the wall that they were interacting with, sending and receiving information. And in a second one of the pictures that he sent me, and it was fact, so wasn't as clear as some of his actual drawings, you could see the ship was underwater because there were giant kinds of windows of whatever quality material they used to be able to withstand, again, those pressures, but they were transparent, and you could see through those windows there were whales swimming by, and there were large, some kind of a technology, a big, flat kind of, just receiving and sending to the whales that were plastered right against the window to receive the information through the glass or through that quality of window that it was. And the picture depicted all of that with the dolphins in the pools and the whales outside, and they're sending information from their melons on their head, vibrational information. So I said, okay, I guess that was the information I needed. And then I started to pay more attention after that about what was going on in the ocean. And you'll find that more than 50% of the sightings of UFOs are sightings of ships coming up out of water, either the ocean or lakes. More than 50% are, and there are a lot of them, and there are pictures of them. So I've had a number of sightings here as well of that, and apparently here in Hawaii it's a very good place to have an underwater base, for lack of a better word, an underwater meeting place between scientists, human scientists, and extraterrestrials who also inhabit our Earth but live mostly in the oceans. So I have a lot of information on that on my website, and then it was further enhanced. I take people to swim with the humpback whales and very under very strict rules and protocol in areas that are very remote and where we hold hands and are respectful, of course, of the whales. And we were out, far out to sea on a liveaboard boat. There were three liveaboard boats there. And one night, this huge ship, extraterrestrial ship, was hovering right above us. It was about 10 o'clock at night, so it was dark. And all you could see was lights kind of going around the outside of the ship. It looked like a very large triangular-shaped one, very beautiful, colorful lights, making different images like the Eye of Hathor and other images. And it was just staying there right above us, just giant. I mean, it was like a couple of miles big. It was, we couldn't see the ends of it. And I had a number of my people in my group had already gone to bed. So I went downstairs on the boat down to where they were sleeping and knocked on their doors and said, you've got to wake up. You've got to wake up. You have to see this. So they all came up, and we all looked at it, and it was magnificent, so beautiful. And then we radioed the other captains on the other two liveaboard boats that were there, and yes, they could see it, and all their people were watching it, too, and looking at it. So we decided to communicate, and we communicated with the extraterrestrials that were on the ship, and we asked if we could, what they were there for, and if we could communicate with them, and we're sending them love, and, what do you say? Sometimes you don't know exactly what to say. And they communicated back that they were there to communicate with the humpback whales, and that we were welcome to tune in to their communications if we'd like to. That would be fine.
Well, the message probably got back. The first ship that came to Earth probably said, "Yes, we have found intelligent life, and it's in the ocean."
That's right, and it wasn't us. No, we're pretty intelligent too. I'm not going to put us down, but yeah. So but it's a funny thing. I mean, we all stayed on the deck of the ship watching this and trying to tune in. Of course, certainly I think the cosmic language is more about sound, so there were sounds of the whales, the sounds from the ship, so we weren't always so good at translating it, but we were good at feeling it and feeling what was going on and the love between the two civilizations. That was beautiful. So we're sitting there, and it got to be midnight. We'd been swimming with the whales all day. Everyone was tired, and little by little everybody kind of wandered off back to their beds and fell asleep. And like, what are you going to do when you have this big ship above you and you're out in the middle of the ocean, and after a while you just go to bed, So you can't really take a picture. It's too dark. Your flash bulb's not going to reach there. And it was just a memorable experience, and we all wrote it up, and it was the highlight of the week, of course.
Yeah,
so that's just one example of many. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I heard a story about a man who was in a wheelchair who had actually gone swimming with the dolphins. Is there some kind of healing that these dolphins can do? I mean, do people who have disabilities and such, is this something that has been is commonly done now? Do they go and swim with the dolphins? Does that help them?
Yes, many people do, and I have witnessed a lot. I work sometimes with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and if you're familiar with them, they're a wonderful organization that grants the dying wish of children for whom there's really no hope of survival, mm-hmm. that they have a terminal illness. And so they ask that child, what would they like to do before they die? And the children, many of them, choose to swim with dolphins. it used to be they'd be brought to captive facilities, but now with the children who are coming in now, and they're so aware, and they'll say, no, I want to be with the free-swimming dolphins. So that's why they had contacted me, and I was taking people out. And we saw incredible things occur. It just many, many experiences of where the doctors would call me later and say, the child is now out of the wheelchair. The child is talking. The child can count up to number 20. This is, for example, a child who had had 150 operations for a brain tumor that they could never really remove. And so many situations like that. And then besides those dramatic ones, I mean, I had a woman who had been in a car accident. Her neck was in a cast, and it was right before she was scheduled to come be with me to swim with dolphins. She decided to come anyway, and she just swam anyway, took off her neck thing, and she swam. And when she got back, there was no sign of any injury at all in her neck. And there's been many cases, too, of course, where dolphins can detect pregnancy in women and they kind of give it away. Maybe the women weren't ready to tell yet, or they were waiting, and the dolphins would just be very focused on their tummies and certainly communicating with the baby there in another water environment there. So we see a lot of that. And, yeah, that case with the man in the wheelchair, if it's the same one that I'm thinking of, my friend Franz, He would come with me on a number of different whale and dolphin trips. He really enjoyed the water, as you can imagine, because he was paralyzed from the waist down. And his upper body was very strong. So whereas we have a protocol when we're with dolphins and whales, we never swim overhand. We don't do anything that would startle them. We keep our arms at our side, and we only kick our legs to move along. But in his case, of course, he had to use his arms, and he had those gloves on that are webbed to help him move ahead with the rest of us while we're in the water. And so he would come all the way to the boat in a wheelchair, and then he would just kind of slide and slither into the boat. He didn't mind doing that at all. He liked being independent. And then he could get, you know, slide off the boat, and his upper body, he could pull himself back on. And so, yeah, that one day he was out there, and, of course, we have a lot of pictures of it, and all of the swimmers, mostly when you're in the water floating, you're floating flat on top. But in his case, of course, his legs would be hanging down. He couldn't use them. And just his upper body was on the surface with his snorkel mask and snorkel tube. And I'm always watching. There were 10 people, so I put my head down, and I could counting. I looked up on the surface, counting heads, rather, and there were, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, everyone's there. And all of a sudden, I see my friend Franz. He's moving through the water so fast. How is he doing that? You know, how can he swim that fast? I looked down, and there was a baby whale. This baby whale, they're so sweet anyway, had been going round and round underneath us all, and we'd all been just staying quiet and letting it come to us. And this time the baby whale came right over to Franz, looked in his eye, saw that he trusted them, they trusted each other, and the baby put the back of his tail, where it's not sharp, where it's rounded, the back part of his tail right behind Franz's knees. And then slowly started propelling him along, being so careful to make sure his head and his snorkel remained above water so he could breathe, and just took him for a ride.
That is incredible.
Oh, my gosh. We were all in tears, including Franz. It was just the most beautiful thing ever. And yet, not surprising in a way. They are so sensitive and so giving to the human race. They really are. It was very powerful. So, yeah, I have a picture of that on my website, too, of him being moved along by the baby whale.
Great. You know, one of these days I got to bring Autumn out to the Hawaii area. And
you've got to bring Autumn here for sure.
Yeah, she's always wanted to swim with dolphins. I was always afraid, you know, when I go in the ocean to swim sometimes, And I always worried that I wouldn't be able to tell quick enough a shark from a dolphin because I just haven't been into it like she is. And she says, oh, no, you can identify them really easy. But so, I'd have to get over my paranoias with that. I wouldn't want to jump into a school of sharks.
Yeah, they look kind of alike, you know, really. I mean, it's just their tail goes different directions, and the sharks have a more pointy head in general, you know. But it's very interesting. Like as I had mentioned, I wasn't a swimmer. Well, I grew up in New Jersey, and the Atlantic Ocean was pretty rough there. And moving to Hawaii made all the difference because the water is calm. The dolphins are here year-round, and there are a lot of whales, too, that live here year-round. The humpbacks migrate here, and, of course, in the United States, you can't swim with any whales that are on the endangered species list like the humpbacks are. And but the water here is so clear and so calm that it was easy to learn to swim here. And also, the whale, the sharks are not attacking people here. You know, they don't do that much. As far as I know, I've researched all the way back and even asked the Hawaiian kahunas. No one has ever been killed by a shark in these waters. Now, I don't recommend that to other places. There's other places on the globe where you really do have to be careful. But here, sometimes the sharks are swimming right along with the dolphins. They're all friends. You know, they're all part of the ocean family. And I've had to change my thinking. Often when we go to swim with the pilot whales here, the pilot whales can use their sonar to find fish. And so sometimes the white-tipped sharks will follow along with them just to get the leftover pieces of fish. And so we go in the water, and the sharks circle around, but they don't attack. You know, they really have been misrepresented in a lot of ways. So, of course, sometimes there are attacks, but it's very rare here. It's, in fact, on other islands, there have been a couple, and one time the kahuna said to me, it was karmic between that particular shark and that particular person. But
wow.
It's not something we even see because here the dolphins, the spinners, go out in deep water at night, every night, and that's where they feed. And then every morning they come in close to shore in the shallow water to be with us and play with us, and that's where we swim with them in the shallow water. So you're not seeing anything big there, and nothing big there.
No, that's
so you gotta come. You have to come.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something I would love to do one of these days is swim with dolphins. I think that would be just fascinating. Very important that you do that. And Joan, I seen a piece on the History Channel a while back about mermaids. I actually contacted them. And I never got a reply from them. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm talking about, but is there any truth at all to the whole mermaid thing?
Yes, I think I know what film you're talking about. It was very good. Was it the one that was called Mermaids, and it was about some researchers
Yes. And
mentioned Noah, and that they determined that there were mermaids from the research they were doing over time.
Right.
That was an excellent film, and I know Noah has put out a disclaimer reminding people that it was only a story, you know, that was made, that it looks like a real research project, but it was a film that was made to about that subject. And I have so many people calling in, writing in, asking about it. You know, I have learned over time that there are so many things that have been labeled as myths and legends and fairy tales that over time turn out to be real and true, such as my personal experiences with Sasquatch that I at one time thought they were not real, and now I know they are. So I tend to believe in something like that, like mermaids, where there are so many young girls in particular, children who believe in them, who draw pictures of them, who relate to films about them, who want to be like them in the water. And I just think it will eventually be found out. There will be proof discovered and found that will determine there are mermaids. Now, whether or not they'll look like kind of the ones that we see at Walt Disney or films such as that, I'm not sure. But I think they do exist, and we'll learn more and more about them as time goes on.
See, when History Channel first put that out, I don't believe that they told anybody in the beginning that it was just a story. I mean, there was a lot of people were believing it, me included. I thought, well, especially when I went to the websites and I seen that it said Homeland Security had taken them down, I thought, well, there's got to be some truth to it. And I tried to contact them to find out, and they didn't get back to me. So I said, well, if they're not going to get back to me, then I'm going to just go on the record and say it must not be true then.
Yeah, no, and there were so many truthful parts in there. For instance, the sound of that bloop or that beeping sound that they were able to record underwater. Way back many years ago, I happened upon the Navy's website and came upon that sound, and the Navy was putting it, they had it on their site because they said they couldn't identify it. They didn't know what it was underwater, some mysterious thing making sounds. And I loved the sound. I felt so attracted to it. And so with their little piece that they had on their site, I recorded it over and over and over and over, that little excerpt, and would play it and share it with people, wondering if it was the sound of a whale. And it was interesting that in that film, the mermaid film, when they show the sound on a graph and show the acoustic image of what kind of a shape it was coming from, I don't know if you recall that part, but in the two different locations where they did analyze it in the film, the shape on that film, whether or not this is real or not, was the shape of a perfect UFO. It was rounded on top, rounded on bottom, and it was a disc. So, I mean, that could have been like a whale shape, too, but they didn't speak to that or say anything about that. I found that was very interesting. I kept a copy of that film. I really like it. My granddaughters love that film, except they wanted the mermaids to be prettier, you know. They weren't so pretty looking. And there was a disclaimer someplace in there, in really small print, that this is just, you know, a reenactment. It's just a story. But they really did find a sound like that. They really were unable to identify it. And what was interesting, just a little inside piece here, was when I went back to the Navy site and when they called the same sound as by the same name, when I listened to it, they had changed the sound that they had there now. They no longer were allowing people to hear, or they for some reason got mixed up, or they weren't putting out the original sound anymore on the Navy and on the NOAA sites. They called it the same thing, but it was changed. So I was glad I had recorded the original sound.
Me too. I've got a recording of it back when it happened. I think it was in 2010.
Very good. Yeah.
So I have a recording of that as well, and I've played it on the air a few times, and you know, and it almost did have a sound like a whale, but
yeah, it's beautiful, and you know, we hear stories, or I do, that more and more we're going to be amazed by some of the new information coming out. And I always try to think, what is it? What's the amazing information going to be? You know, I want to know now. And so maybe that's going to be one of it. Maybe the reality of mermaids and their whole history, and maybe that they're still here and where they live and that they are communicating with the dolphins. That might be part of what's going to be revealed.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with that. I'd like that.
Yeah, you know, they even threw in that part where they had pulled out, I don't know if it was a shark, that they claimed that they pulled out of the ocean and it had a piece of a spear stuck in the side of it. And they claimed that this was a tool made by the mermaid. But they also claimed that this was once a landman who went out into the ocean and just developed fins and stuff. And I'm thinking, if I go jump out in the middle of the ocean right now, I don't see me turning, you know, getting fins and gills and being able to live out there. So, yeah, I did find some of it a little hard to believe, but they got me. I fell for it.
Yeah, It's a good one for sure. It is, you know, because it helps spark imagination, and I believe in that. If you can imagine it, you can create it. So
that's right.
I'm all for it.
Okay, and one last question for you tonight. How far back do dolphins and whales go? I mean, were they around back in the dinosaur days? What's the history on them?
Well, you know, again, what I've learned over time is this has to do with what timeline you're looking at.
Right.
I think there are timelines where they were very ancient, prehistoric creatures of the sea. And then there's the timeline that the dolphins told me that they came through a window in time more recently. And when I talked to the Hawaiians here, because they've had a civilization here for at least 6,000 years, and I said, how come in all of your chants and your hula, there's no mention of dolphins? And the kahuna, who is the spiritual leader, he just looked me in the eyes and he said, they were not here. And I've had other corroboration, too, with some Egyptologists that I met with, and also a man who does tattooing for a living. He's a very famous in Europe as a tattoo artist. And he said earlier than 1940, he can't find any old pictures of dolphins at all that he could use for tattooing. So there's some... It's a very interesting phenomenon. When did they really come? The dolphins had told me that when it's time for us as a human race to move into the work that we came here to do, our play that we came here to do, that they would come close to shore. They'd start to go up rivers. They'd start to be found in unlikely places. And the dolphins would start to leap in the air and spin and turn and intrigue people and beg them to come out into the water to be with them. And that would be a sign to us that it was time now for us to come forward with what we know and share it with the world, that the time was now. So I feel that time has come, and who knows how long they may have been quietly living in the oceans and maybe being called mermaids from their amazing sounds they make underwater, or maybe they were with the mermaids. But now they're here, and now they're really making their presence known, and I really feel the more people that can interact with them in higher consciousness, the better it is for the planet.
No, I agree. I agree. Yeah. Now, the sperm, is it the sperm whale that is the biggest one, the one that looks like an old, I don't know, beagle with no ears? You know, it just looks like just a friendly little, well, not little, but, you know, it's got that it's just huge. It's the biggest one, right?
Yeah. No. It's big, that's for sure, but the biggest one is the blue whale.
Ah, okay.
And I'd swam with the blue whale in the Sea of Cortez. And then the other big ones really right up there is the fin whale and the Brutus whale. And then the sperm whale is closer in size to the humpback whale. And we have, and they're big, but they're not the biggest. And the sperm whale, of course, is a toothed whale, and I've swam with them a number of times here. They live here in these waters. They're far out into the deep water, though. We have to go out about 15 miles to come upon them. But they're very friendly also, and there's like a train going through the water. They have a very huge presence alongside you, those small little pectoral fins, a small dorsal fin, but that giant head with a very small bottom jaw with teeth in it. So very, very dramatic looking, and their eye, I just swim alongside their eye. And I've even had a smaller, a young one, a juvenile, who seemed to be by him or herself, who kept coming up and swimming with one of my groups. He'd go down, and all he could see was a little bit of white on the bottom jaw, going, 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 gone, gone. And then all of a sudden, as we kept floating and watching, we'd see him coming back and coming back up again and back right up to us and floating on the surface with us. So all of them seem willing to interact with humans at this time, if humans are willing to go into the ocean environment and meet them there.
They're so big, they remind me of something from prehistoric times, and that's why I'd asked. And what about the killer whale? Now, you know the incident with in Florida, SeaWorld, they had this whale captive, and it killed the woman. I mean, is that common? Out of captivity, do those killer whales usually aggressive?
I asked about that. I asked the whales, and they said that the whales that are killing, like the orca whales, that are killing other cetaceans and that, you know, injure people, they said that was an aberration, that was not their normal behavior, and that somehow by their experiences on planet Earth and what's happening here with the frequencies or what happened in the past, it's affected them and affected their behavior. The whales told me that is not normal behavior for them, and they were very saddened by that. So, it's mostly in captive facilities. I mean, we have swam with the orcas in the wild, no problem at all. And it's just try to imagine if you're an animal that makes all of its communication and navigation and finding food through sound that you're putting out of this huge melon, this huge area in your head, and you're now in a pool where it hits the wall and bounces back to you. Every sound you put out bounces back to you. You could be sure that after a while you would become mute. You would just stop. So it's kind of like if you put a person in a closet and gave them food every so often to keep them alive, but they would go crazy, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Joan, listen.
Very, very sad. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for being a guest here tonight on Late Night in the Midlands. It took me a little while to get a hold of you and get you on, but I do appreciate it. It's been well worth it. Thank you
so much, Michael. I love talking with you. It's been wonderful.
So if you can help us out, please do. Good night, everybody.